This is the Kids Health Network, the health and psychology podcast for parents and carers of children.
The Kids Health Network is brought to you by GP and my daddy, Dr. Andrew Leach. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Grief can be a difficult process for all members of the family. It often goes unrecognised, though, that grief can impact children in their own unique way. For this reason, children react differently during times of grief. This can paint a confusing picture when some children appear to be quite comfortable with grief and others are highly stressed and on edge. I don't think there is any one true way to grieve, and therefore you may need to expect the unexpected in a way. Whilst dealing with your child's grief, it's also important to recognise your own emotions and vulnerability at that time. How is it affecting you? Do you need added support? This is especially true for the loss of close loved ones. Grief comes in many shapes and sizes. Today we look at how it may present in your child, why we grieve, and when to know that it is simply too much for your child to handle. Joining me is child psychologist and regular Kids Health Network podcaster, Madison Pike. Thanks for joining me, Madison.
Thanks for having me again, Andrew.
Okay, so I guess we start at the top with this. When we think of grief, we usually think of this in the form of the death of a family member, but it can actually be occurring in many different settings. Can you explain some of those settings, Madison?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think with children, we might think of grief as when they might lose a family member or even a friend or extended family member. But what we don't think about is that we can grieve, just like adults, the loss of pets, maybe the loss of a change of life. So perhaps if the family's financial situation changes, we might see a divorce or a separation and the child grieving the actual change in the structure of the family. We might see for parents and older children, the child grieving the leaving of the family home. And we also might see separation from family and friends if they move overseas as a grief process with children. So grief can be actually quite a lot of things.
I wouldn't have thought of it in that light in terms of being separated from a situation or moving house or family leaving the home or the child leaving the home, and particularly the long distance of moving where you're completely thrown into a new environment. I didn't realise that could be a form of grief.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, children, do you think they express grief in the same way as adults, or are there differences?
Yeah, look, I think, like you mentioned, Andrew, it's going to be different for every child. What we will see, though, is many emotions coming from grief. So a child who is grieving might actually show anger. They might be quite anxious. They might show shock and maybe isolate themselves. They might be quite regretful or even seem guilty almost as if they've done something wrong. Some children are overwhelmed and some appear quite numb. So we're going to see a lot of emotions with children. But when we look at, I guess, how we might see grief in a child, they are going to have some level of difficulty expressing their grief to us on many occasions. So some of the common grief reactions we might see in kids, we might see a child who, what we say, grieves in doses. So one minute they're really upset and quite distressed by the perhaps a loss of a family member, and the next minute they're quite happily playing, and we sort of go from one extreme to the next, and that can be quite confusing for us as adults when we sort of go through quite a slower process, if you like, with our roller coaster of grief. We might see them acting out their feelings rather than actually expressing them, and that of course depends on the age, but for example a child might just sit really quietly when they're normally someone who's bouncing around, so that might be our indication that they're struggling when they're not actually telling us they're struggling. We might see changes to their eating or their sleeping patterns. If you've got a younger child, you might see them revert in some of their developmental stages. So you might have a three-year-old who's trained to use the toilet and all of a sudden they're bedwetting again. So we could see a revert there. We might see them just being angry and frustrated and acting out when they're not normally a child that would do that. We might see them having difficulty with concentration at school. So really we could see a vast number of signs.
So when is it a problem? I mean, a lot of these things I would see also in the child who has anxiety.
Yeah.
And so do we just allow it to run for a while and let the natural process happen, or do we intervene if it is becoming an impact on school and impact on home, or is it a bit of both?
Yeah, you know what, I think it's a bit of both, because like adults, there's no set time for our grief process, but when our grief is going on for quite a long time, so maybe after a couple of months for a child, and it's significantly impacting on their everyday life, then we want to do something about it. So if we are seeing perhaps signs that the child might be preoccupied with dying, so they become quite fascinated and quite focused on it, and that's for a long period of time, then we might need to address that. If they're crying or really sad, or we're seeing sort of ongoing behavioural issues since the time of the loss, then that would be an indication that we might need some help. If they're really struggling with sleep or appetite, so any of, I guess, our major indicators that a child is not coping, then we might look to get some help. So whilst grief is not a mental health disorder as such, it certainly can impact on our functioning. And when that is happening, then we want to look at getting some support.
Mm. And it has some of those similar symptoms, or maybe not symptoms, reactions that mental health disorders can have. So it can be a confusing picture for parents and caregivers and health workers. But I guess it's important to recognise that grief is actually a normal process.
And, yes, it is.
Yeah, and that it's a process that sometimes we just have to go through and get through to help us understand what's going on. And it's our body's way of reacting to what has happened. It's a shock. And as hard as it can be, it's almost like we have to step through each of those moments as we...
Or the stages.
Yeah, the stages. The stages of grief. What are those stages?
Yeah, so look, I mean, the most common... I'll use the most common stages of grief that we know in therapy, and that's Kubler-Ross's five stages. So when we look at these stages, whilst they are a process as such, what we might find, and I encourage people not to be too focused on those stages, is that people do go between stages and they might... you know, have a little bit of one stage and not so much of the next. So what are they? First one is denial. And with children, this can be a difficult one because a child, perhaps under the age of 7, doesn't understand the finality of death as it is. So we might see them denying the death by, oh, you know, when is mum or dad coming home? And we think, are they denying this or do they genuinely not understand? And that can be a bit of both. So the first stage is the denial. This can't be happening to us, or this isn't happening. I don't want to acknowledge it. The second one is anger, and so this is where we might see some behavioural problems with kids, and this is why has this happened to my family? Why, you know, do my friends still have their parents together, or why did their dog not pass away? So the big, I guess, frustration as to why me. The next step is bargaining. So this is where we start to say, well, if I'm really good, maybe Santa will bring my dog back for Christmas. Or so we might see them trying to bargain their way of reverting the loss. And adults actually go through all of these stages too. So with children, again, it can be really difficult for us to understand, is it because they don't understand developmentally, or are they going through the grief? And yeah, usually it's a bit of both. The next one is depression. So this is where we start to feel really quite sad and distressed. Here we might see some fear with kids as well. So is this going to happen to somebody else? You know, we might see them wanting to sleep with the parents in the bed, or I guess just general fearfulness of death. And the last one is acceptance. So, you know, I'm a big believer that we don't ever completely accept the loss of a loved one or a large loss in our life, but we certainly learn to accept to live with the loss and understand and process the loss. So I think you kind of touched on, it's actually really important that we go through these stages in order to get to acceptance. So we need to grieve, we need to be sad, we need sometimes a little bit of anger and processing that in order to get to the point where we fully comprehend grief. And children are the same.
What's left, I describe to people as being like a scar. It's always there. You always feel it. It's in, you know, in your thought process, and it pulls at you every now and then, and hurts every now and then, just like a scar can that's left over after an injury.
Yeah.
So this is a mental scar, or you know, a scar. It's actually quite a physical scar as well, because of the person that you used to have with you, or the pet, or the situation you used to have is now gone.
Yes.
So with these stages of grief, it's sounding like they're quite universal across children and adults, maybe presenting slightly differently in each group. We might go into each age group shortly. Is it ever okay to say, look, this anger is too much. We're going to skip this stage and get you onto the other side.
Yeah, look, and I think you mentioned again in early on there, Andrew, that as the people supporting this child, it's very common you're also grieving in this process. You may have also lost someone or also, you know, lost your relationship if it's a divorce. So, yes, this is a trying time for everyone. What I encourage with the anger stage is we still want to manage the anger. Just because the child is feeling angry and starting to demonstrate those behaviours, we still want to encourage them and help them do that in an appropriate way. So, for example, if an adult was grieving and they were punching walls at work or throwing things at their colleagues, just because they were grieving doesn't mean that behaviour would be acceptable, nor would it be tolerated. So with children, we still are able to, you know, sit them down and say, hey, this is not okay. If you're feeling angry, we need to talk about that anger rather than display that anger, and encourage them to still go through their feelings of anger without the outburst, because we still want to parent that behaviour.
Mm. Yeah, at the end of the day, you still need to have boundaries on behaviour.
Yes.
Tricky balance for parents. Yes. I wanted to start with the really little kids.
Yeah.
So we might be going all the way down to zero into preschool ages. How does a parent help a child this age handle a death or a loss of a loved one or a grieving process? What should parents do in this age group where they're just starting to work out what emotion is?
Yeah, yep. So I mean, I think between maybe zero and two, there's very little connection to grief. And so we might not actually see a physical change in that child. You know, we might see them a little bit distressed because they're picking up on our distress, but there's not, I guess, any specific strategies for a child under two, other than comforting them when they're distressed, because they are not going to be able to express to you the fact that they're grieving.
In saying that, though, I have had parents in this situation where their baby has changed after a
temperament.
Yes. After a, you know, and that could be as simple as they're feeding differently, their development might have changed.
Yeah, or stagnated.
Yes.
Yep.
Or they're more up and down with their emotions. So I think you know, it's there can be signs of some
signs
kind
of the grief, yeah, or the change
of grief, yeah,
certainly. And I think more so that is the child or the infant picking up on the change in the, I guess, emotional energy, if you like, of the caregivers and their grief.
Mm.
yeah
So moving up from two onwards, maybe three to seven,
yeah,
putting that group together, what do you expect to see if something significant happens in the family?
Look, these children are perhaps not going to understand the finality of death, and certainly not easily. So what we might see with these children is they're going to ask, you know, when is that person coming back, or maybe they'll come back next year. So we might see some, I guess, difficulties with the child processing the loss. What is really great with these kinds of ages is books and toys and acting out grief and, you know, the loss of a loved one to help them process that. This is the age we'll probably see a lot of emotional outbursts as well, because it's very difficult for children under seven to really concretely express their emotions. Or they might say, I'm feeling angry, when they're actually feeling quite sad. So the child will try to express to you how they're feeling about their grief, but perhaps, you know, we have to be a little bit more scientific, you know, investigator, if you like, as a parent, to try and really get to the bottom of how they're actually feeling.
Probe those feelings.
Yeah.
You mentioned books. So do you know any good books?
No, not off the top of my head.
I'm sure they're out there.
There is. Look, yep. There's some great ones out there. Oh,
that's okay. That's all good. Maybe if I find any or you think of any, we can put it in the bottom of this podcast episode.
Yep.
Just a little bit further about that for 3 to 7 year olds. So often get asked, what do I do? Do I tell the child what's happened exactly in detail so they know what's going on, they're not hidden, or do I hide away some of those facts and try and protect them?
Yeah, really, really difficult question, because I think with children in this age group, we need to be quite literal. Okay, so even the terminology, you know, we might see as adults, that person passed away. With children, we probably want to say that person died. Mm. Okay, so we want to be quite literal. Do we need to share all the details with them? Well, that probably not. It depends, I guess, of what's happened there. Children will ask you, though, and that's where the difficulty lies. So, you know, do we want to, I guess it depends on the age, but if we're talking about a 2 to 4 year old and they say, well, what happened to mummy? We might say mummy got sick. and you know, she was unwell, we might not want to go through the full finite details with a younger child, but we also don't want to lie to them, okay, because that develops a sense of insecurity.
In there. That age, why are we not telling them the full details? I'm just curious to know.
Absolutely, yeah. Look, I think we don't want to instill a lot of fear in children, so keeping in mind they don't really understand the finality of death at this age, if we're to, I guess, bombard them with information that we usually would protect them from, because let's be honest, we wouldn't normally have a 3 or 4 year old in a conversation when we're talking about tragedies that are going on in the world, or we wouldn't engage in a conversation and tell them about all the difficult things in our world. Why? Because we want to protect them from those adult conversations that perhaps they're not developmentally ready to process. Mm. And we could instill quite a lot of fear in them by giving them the information that they're not ready for.
What kind of fear?
Yeah, I guess they might become fearful of being out on the streets if it was a car accident. They might be fearful of cars because, you know, you're telling me that people die in cars. Mm.
Or illness.
Yeah, or illness. It could be, you know, I grazed my leg, am I going to die? So, like I said, kids will be quite literal, and whilst we need to be literal with them, we do need to shelter them from some of the, I guess, graphic information.
So be honest with a filter.
Yes.
And filter out some of the parts that may cause stress. And this is dependent on each child as well, because, I mean, the 5 to 7 year olds, some of them can be very mature in the way that they approach situations.
Absolutely.
And others can be very anxious or timid or scared or have trouble with discussing, you know, emotional things and things that are quite heavy with emotion. So child dependent, go with the flow with what your child is sort of wanting to explore.
Yep.
But being aware that too much could be difficult for them
to process.
So the older kids, is it a different story with how to approach this, how they present, what we do with that age group, you know, the 8 onwards kind of age group?
Sure. So if we're looking at maybe 8 to 12, so pre-adolescent there, that age group are going to start to understand that death is final. So we're probably not going to see as much questioning as to if this situation is going to change. They're going to understand that. Where it becomes difficult if we're grieving perhaps a separation in the family, then it's not so final for them. They might wonder if mum and dad are going to get back together, and that's a normal process. But certainly with death, they're going to start to understand it as a permanent process, I guess. They might feel more anxious and more worried that someone else might die. So this is the realisation, even without us providing all this information to them, that, well, if it can happen to my animal, or it can happen to my parent or my grandfather, maybe it can happen to somebody else. They also might be worried about losing other things. So if we've got a change in the family structure, are they going to worry all of a sudden that their siblings are no longer going to live with them? And that might be something we've never discussed, but they start to have, I guess, further worries without us even prompting that. So we need to be even more honest with these children. And like you said, it really is child dependent, but their questions are going to be, I guess, more direct, and they're going to want to know more information.
Potentially more spiritual as well. You know, where do they go? What happens afterwards?
Yes. Why do some people go, you know, be buried, and why are some cremated? So there could be lots of questions.
Be prepared. Because they hit you when you least expect it, these kids.
Yeah, and I think on that one, Andrew, as parents, it's okay to say, that's a good question. Let's explore that together. Give yourself the moment to say, all right, how am I going to answer this one?
Yeah. And then the adolescents may be more vulnerable to stronger emotions. That's my interpretation. And mental health problems with loss of a loved one in particular.
Yes. So this age group are, you know, I guess, starting to think like adults and are starting to understand grief and death like adults. So with that, though, they haven't got the same emotional regulation as adults yet. So that's quite a dangerous mix, if you like. I understand and I'm grieving like an adult, but I don't have the same emotional regulation and ability to understand my complex grief the same way an adult would.
So does this lead on to like rebellious kind of attitude? Like, I don't care. My anger is going to come out as risk-taking.
Yep, could do. We could also see a really anxious child. So we could have, somebody who, you know, starts breaking all the boundaries and the rules. Certainly, you know, we can see male adolescents, perhaps if it's a loss of a father, try to step up into that role and become the dominant member of the family as a way of trying to control that situation for them, and, you know, a way of trying to, I guess, repress some of that emotion that they just don't know how to regulate. So you're right, this is quite a risky group because they may not come to us with their concerns and their questions. They may choose to engage in risk-taking behaviours, or may then go on to develop other mental health disorders.
And the other one that concerns me is isolating themselves. They box themselves away until they're ready to discuss further. And again, that could be a normal grief process for them. They need that time to accept what's happening. So finding a balance for this age group must be a challenge for parents.
Yes, definitely.
So we've talked about grief being normal. When is it abnormal?
Okay, so I guess the overall answer to that one is when it's significantly impacting on the everyday functioning of the child. So, you know, we're a couple of months down the track here, they're still not able to go to school, perhaps their behaviours have regressed and we're having real difficulty getting them to sleep, or they will not sleep in their own room when that's something they'd normally do. We also might actually start to see some secondary mental health disorders come into play here, where so grief itself is not a disorder, but we might then see some separation anxiety disorder in a child, or we might see a generalized anxiety. We might see some depressive signs where they're struggling to get out of bed in the morning. So looking for, I guess, those general signs that somebody is struggling, and that's where we would start to say this is not actually, I guess, a normal grief process anymore.
So you said 2 months. That seems quite quick for someone to be, you know, if you're worried about them, to be needing help potentially. Is there a time frame that you'd expect grief to last?
In adults, the answer is probably no. I think it depends on the person. With children, though, look, when I say 2 months, we would expect to see some improvement in their behaviour or their ability to cope in that 2 months. If we think that they are on that right track and things are improving, they're just taking a little bit longer, then that's okay. And certainly, we're probably not going to see any child completely okay within 8 weeks. It's more about, is their functioning improving or is that getting worse? And that's where we might start to question, does this child or this adolescent need some support?
Okay. So what does a parent do if they think this is not going very well? Do they have to talk to someone in particular? Do they have to come to the GP? Is there a resource they should be using? Or do they carry on and wait and see what happens? You know, like, is there a guide to this?
Yeah, look, unfortunately with grief, because there isn't a specific time frame and there isn't, I guess, a criteria, if you like, for us to assess this as mental health professionals and general practitioners, the difficulty we've got and the difficulty parents got is identifying when is it that we need help. So I always say, if in doubt, present to your GP with the child and express what symptoms or what concerns you have, and then in collaboration with your GP, determine whether that child does need that help or not. Because sometimes they might just need a little bit of help, a few tools, a few techniques to get them through the time, and other times they might need, you know, more support. And your GP can then look at what is the best option for your child, and do they need to see a psychologist for those tools and strategies?
So I guess in summary, if the child has had a significant change in their behaviour,
yeah,
and their response to grief seems to be prolonged, to get help, and their behaviour is affecting their well-being, their interactions at school or home, and it's also important to check yourself and to recognise, you know, am I going okay? Am I processing this okay? And everyone has their own time frame as to how long that might take. So it almost is as important that you get the right help as your child when you're going through this. I was going to ask a specific example for you.
Sure.
Probably one of the more common cases that we see in GP land, and that's of the grief of a pet, the loss of a pet.
Yes.
Yep. So have you had any kids with this?
Yes, I have. Yeah. And I guess if we look at the loss of a pet, you know, it really will also depend on the age. So we might sometimes see a young child really affected and then another child who just sort of doesn't seem as impacted. I think, like anything, it's to do with the connection. So if that child was close with that animal, really enjoyed taking that animal for walks or engaging with that animal, then it is a significant loss, just like the loss, I guess, of a person for that child, because they see that animal as a part of their family. So when we look at that grief, not only have they lost the pet and that loved person for them, they've also got a change in their structure and their routine at home, because they might not no longer feed that animal or take the animal for a walk. So there's a lot of changes there that cause distress with children. And I think that's a fair response.
So if the dog dies, the family dog's been there for many years.
Yep.
Can you give an example of how the parent should approach that with the child?
Yeah, so again, it is going to depend on the child, but we want to be honest with them. You know, just like humans, animals get old. If it was an accident, we want to talk about that, but being careful with the details there. Be honest and open with the child. Keep talking about that animal and the memories. So what sometimes we can do is, in our own grief that's really difficult, is we don't want to go to the good memories and the happy times, because it causes us too much distress while we're still grieving. So that can be difficult for children, because all of a sudden, not only have we lost them, but we're not talking about them. It's as if they're not here anymore. And that can sometimes, I guess, where we could see a lot of anger as well. It's almost like everyone else has forgotten about that animal. So talk about the memories, whether we, you know, go and buy a nice tree and plant that in the garden. So get the children involved in the memories and I guess
celebrate
the process. Mm. Yeah, the celebration of that animal being in the family. And also be honest and accept and tell them it's okay to grieve too.
Is it good to have a ritual in terms of burying the pet, going through that process, talking about what's going on here, you know, whatever it might be, saying a prayer or whatever it might be, you know, related to that family? Is it good to have a symbol, I guess?
Yeah, and a lot of families do that, and it's perfectly healthy. So yes, if the child does want to be a part of that process of burying the animal and finding a plaque that you put in the garden, all of those things are really helpful. What I would say, though, if you've got a child that does not want to be involved in that process, we don't push it. We want to engage them in other ways. So that might be, okay, well,
draw the pet.
Yeah, let's draw a picture for the fridge, or let's go and get some of our favourite photos printed. So there's lots of ways we can engage the child if they don't want to be a part of that ritual.
And some of them, it might take time to introduce some of those aspects.
Absolutely.
What sort of mental health disorders would you expect to see if grief was becoming more complicated?
So I think probably a common one we might see in younger children is the separation anxiety disorder. So this is, I've lost someone and now I'm terrified I'm going to lose my other person. So I can think of an example of a young boy actually aged two and a half who lost his father, and then come maybe six or seven, develop this fear when we started to understand death as finality, that, well, if dad can pass away, what's going to happen to mum? So developed a severe separation anxiety to mum. So that's, you know, many years down the track.
I think that's a really common problem.
Absolutely. Where we start to go through the developmental stage of, hang on a second, death is final, and I didn't understand it at 2.5, but I do now, and what's going to happen to mum? And if something happens to mum, what's going to happen to me? Now, that was actually triggered by 9/11. For that child, and seeing the buildings and his mum working in the city. So an event like that actually triggered, I guess, a secondary grief process, if you like, of fear and separation anxiety. So that's a common one.
And it carries over to then sleep time. They don't want to sleep alone.
No.
School separation. And I guess it sort of, as you say, it starts to affect most of aspects of their life. And I think there are other angles you could look at. There's anxiety and depression as well that could be related to the grief as a complicated part of that. So as a branch of the grief, if we're seeing, you know, signs of poor sleep and low mood and withdrawal from things, activities, then we need to think about depression.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, if we're looking at a child that's saying, well, what's the point of life? And this child's saying this maybe consistently for a longer period of time, or an adolescent, well, you know, if people die, what's the point of living? And that's really impacting on them, then we might see an indication of depression. Likewise, if we've got somebody who's really, really worried about the world and the state of the world and all the death and the injuries in the world, we might see an anxiety or a health and a worldly anxiety come from that.
You talk a lot about tragedies in the world, and one closing question might be, like, is it good for kids to watch the news and to see these things happening? Or should we protect them from that?
Yeah, I think in this day and age, Andrew, we can't protect them forever. And, you know, when we're talking about perhaps children 12 and up, we might be able to turn the news off at night, but we can't stop them from seeing what happens. It's all over social media, it's all over the internet, and when they're using that for their schoolwork, they have easy access to this information. So, look, I think we shelter them from as much as we can in an appropriate way. So if something happens and they see that information, we talk to them about it. Well, you know, I saw the news too today. What did you think? And talk to them about the process, because we can't shelter them, and we certainly can't shelter them forever, because they will become adults one day and they will be exposed to the information. But again, that's age appropriate. So, you know, we don't want to be having horrific stories on the news when we've got really young children around that are watching that information. But I guess to be able to shelter them, whilst that's a really ideal situation, it's not going to happen in our world today.
Yeah. Are there any good resources, Madison, that you'd direct parents to when they're listening to this and they're thinking there's something going on for them?
Yeah, so there's a couple of great websites. Beyond Blue's always great for some fact sheets, I guess some basic information to get you started. They'll also tell you some, I guess, some other places you can go for resources. There's also the childhoodgrief.org website, and Andrew, if you could put these in the link, that would be great. Again, that talks about how can counselling and how can parents help their children during this time. Other than that, we've got the government websites, which will give the standardised information. So perhaps Better Health Victoria has some really good information about how do we healthily get through grief with our children.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I'll put all those resources on the podcast summary, and I think this is a really heavy topic. I mean, it probably strikes some emotion with people, because we've all gone through, well, a lot of people have gone through loss, some more than others.
Absolutely.
And I think if you feel like your child is struggling in a way that needs more urgent attention, I often refer to the Kids Helpline, which is 1-800-555-1800. And that's a sort of a 24/7 resource for kids to use as a phone call, as a starting point. But general practice, our GP is a really good starting point as well. If you think that it could be something that could be raised with the GP, your local GP, moving on to then someone like yourself, a psychologist. So don't shy away from it if it is affecting you, and get the support you need.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Madison, for coming. And we'll see you again for another topic shortly, I'm sure.
You will. Thanks, Andrew.
Hi, everyone. Andrew here. Find out more about this episode and others, as well as resources that I've found to be useful, at my own new website, drandrewleach.com.